Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Tonight, we answer all of your burning questions. Does music have the power to unleash hidden memories? Should Scotland be an independent country? Was the man who pioneered electronic music also a spy? Actually, some of those questions are hard to answer. The Scottish indie pop band Camera Obscura is divided over the upcoming vote on Scottish independence, so they'll just focus on playing some music for us instead. And Leon Theremin, who invented the first working electronic music instrument, was in fact supposed to be spying for Russia, but it just seems like he was too busy partying here in Manhattan in the 1920s. Meanwhile, his instrument, also known as the theremin, would go on to great fame, courtesy of 1950s sci-fi movies like The Day the Earth Stood Still. But one of those questions is actually easy to answer. Can music help unlock memory, as in Alzheimer's patients? The answer seems to be an unequivocal yes. For proof, just watch the documentary film Alive Inside. It follows one social worker who goes on a quixotic mission to bring iPods to people in nursing homes. And as you watch it, you will be so glad that the cameras are there, because some of what you'll see is just astonishing. The film, Alive Inside, won the Audience Award for Documentaries at this year's Sundance Film Festival. It was directed by Michael Rosato Bennett and features Dan Cohen, who's been working on this music and memory project for several years now. Nice to see you again, Dan.
Thank you, John. Thanks for having us.
And Mike, good to have you here with us as well.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Your film, although it is just now getting kind of a wider release around the country later this summer, has a greatest hit.
That is so true.
That happened completely by accident. Dan and I were working together to build him a website with some video clips on it so that it would start to tell his message, and it was a clip of Henry, which many people I think have seen. You know, this old man who had been for almost a decade sitting in a hallway with his head on his chest, you know, finally getting a chance to hear his music. And it was Cab Calloway, and it was music from when he was a young man, and it had an amazing effect on him.
Which, to get the full effect, listeners, you have to watch the clip. It is on our website at soundcheck.org, but you can get a little hint of it, even on the radio. Henry, 94 years old at the time of the filming, his own daughter has to tell him who she is.
Right.
So that's how bad things have gotten. And then this happens.
When I first met him, he was very isolated, and he used to always sit on the unit with his head like this. He didn't really talk to much people, and then when I introduced the music to him, this is his reaction ever since.
How awake was he?
I'm going to give it back to you.
Was he still lost in his dementia? Or had the music in some way changed that?
Henry.
Yeah?
Do you like music?
Yeah, I'm crazy about music. You play beautiful music, beautiful sound.
What was your favorite music when you were young?
Well, Cab Calloway was my number one band guy. I liked That is the holy, the holy, the holy, the holy, the merry, the
holy.
Yeah?
What was your favorite song?
Oh, I'll be home there for Christmas. You can count plans on me. With plenty of snow, mistletoe.
That is a remarkable moment. It went viral on YouTube just about, what, 2 years ago, guys, right?
Right.
How many views has this clip of Henry waking up?
It's over 10 million
over
views 10 right now.
Over 10 million. I mean, it's extraordinary. So, and while I did a little editing of this clip for time, when you ask, what was your favorite song? I didn't edit. He was right there. I mean, he knew exactly what he was going to sing, and he, you know, he's doing the little scatting and stuff. This is a guy who didn't know his own daughter a moment ago, and now... So, Dan, did you know, when you started on this project of bringing music to people in Henry's situation, did you know that you'd be unlocking this sort of memory and this sort of key to people's personalities?
I had no idea. I had a lot, sort of a premonition, a thought maybe, you know, it would, and but I had a lot of questions. So when I started, they didn't allow me to introduce this to people with dementia. I'm a social worker, but I was a volunteer when I started this. And so I'd ask those questions of, like, Dr. Connie Tomeno, who co-founded with Oliver Sacks the Institute for Music and Neurologic Function in the 90s. And yeah, no, music therapists know this. It's just a matter of it's all sort of very limited information and without the ability to have music reach people. And so we wanted to leverage technology to make that happen.
So Music and Memories is the name of the nonprofit?
Music and Memory.
Music and Memory. And it is, but it began just as a kind of an informal volunteer thing.
Exactly right. For 18 months, I just returned to the nursing home every 2 weeks, and I'd hone the list. I wouldn't just figure out what they like, sort of, and then here it is, I'm done. I really wanted to get, we're so used to listening to music that's so-so. And so I'd make it so every song resonated with them.
Now, you mentioned Dr. Connie Tomeno, who's been on Soundcheck before, and Oliver Sacks as well. And, you know, their idea is that music affects every part of the brain, not just one part of the brain. So people with Alzheimer's, you know, where a part of the brain has been really damaged, there are other parts of the brain that are less damaged, and music is still accessible in those parts of the brain.
So what's interesting is that with Alzheimer's, your short-term memory is seriously compromised, but your emotional system is very much intact. And so the music we love, you know, if one song that's a favorite is connected in the brain with autobiographical memories. And so if you have five great songs, five memories, but if you have 100 great songs that are familiar and you love, wow, if that kicks off 100 memories, what does that mean in terms of plasticity, the brain, and being awake and alive and feeling like yourself as opposed to nothing going on?
Right. And again, to get the full effect of the clip of Henry sort of waking up, watch the video on our website at soundcheck.org. Dan Cohen is the social worker who founded the nonprofit Music and Memory. Michael Rosato Bennett is the director of the documentary Alive Inside, which won the Audience Award for Documentary at this year's Sundance Film Festival. Although, Mike, as you say, right up front early in the movie, you didn't set out to do this either.
No, I didn't. And, the interesting thing for me was that experiencing, after seeing Henry, experiencing Henry, and I got a charge out of that. I literally felt deeply moved. And when I looked around the nursing homes where we were, I it seemed very obvious to me that we could do something great in this place. And it was so inexpensive and so easy and so simple. And it was a thing that would connect people. And I feel like that's one of the greatest diseases of our time is disconnection.
Mm.
I think even on the outside, people feel incredibly disconnected.
Well, as you say, you know, Dan's idea of bringing music into these situations is so simple. It's so easy. And therein lies the great irony in our healthcare system, and the gerontologist Bill Thomas pretty much sums this up beautifully in this clip from the film.
In today's really crazy system, I can sit down and write out a script for $1,000 a month, antidepressant. No problem. Nobody asks any questions. If I want to provide a person with a $40 personal music system, that will take a lot of work.
As Dan Cohen finds out as he attempts to get music and memory into various facilities around the country. Now, the person that we hear in the background sort of moaning or making that noise, in a moment, he's given a headphone, the headphones and an iPod, and he calms down, and, right. and the noise stops. So, you know, in the face of this kind of evidence, Dan, why is it that you got so much pushback?
I don't know exactly, but I think we're so used to if it comes in the form of a pill, if we were to generate these kinds of results, everybody, the doctors would all be prescribing them, the families would be calling for them. But because it's something, oh, it's not as Bill Thomas, Dr. Thomas says in the movie, oh, this isn't, you know, considered a medical, it's not real, right? Even though, it's having a better impact than any medicine there is for Alzheimer's. So all the Alzheimer's groups, support groups, doctors should be, before they prescribe an antipsychotic, before they prescribe an anti-anxiety or antidepressant, well, did you try the music yet?
Yeah.
That might do the trick.
Now, I don't want to, you know, suggest that music is a, you know, magic bullet and, you know, it's going to cure all ills and problems. Is there a danger? I mean, there's the case of Denise, who is a bipolar schizophrenic in the film. And one of the social workers says, you know, all of her feelings are extreme. Her joy is extreme, but so is her anger and so is her sorrow. And, you know, the idea of kind of provoking emotion in someone like that through music, you're walking a fine line there, aren't you?
So we're finding, I was at a nursing home in Wisconsin, the administrator said when I said, well, they've been doing this for years, what should I know? We emphasize Alzheimer's a lot. She says, gee, this hasn't been great on our whole floor with people with all sorts of psychiatric issues. So the trick is to, yes, you observe and you work with them and you give them the right music and you make changes when necessary, but there really is no downside to this program. You can't hurt somebody. Mm-hmm. They're not going to end up going to the hospital because you gave them the wrong song. So it's really the upside potentials you and the downside is really, at worst case scenario, it just doesn't work. You know, right. Some people you can't reach.
And we also meet Mary Lou, who, you know, seems like she must have early onset Alzheimer's.
She doesn't exactly seem, correct.
Yes. Doesn't seem that old. But, you know, when you first introduce the iPod to her, at one point she takes it off. You know, it's almost as if she's overwhelmed. And although later she's like glad to, you're picking songs for, oh, I have to have that one. I have to have. But it seems like at first it was too much for her.
Well, actually, that was right after she was really thrilled to have it. She had the Beach Boys playing. And it just brought back, because before that, the angst of this sort of the middle stage of the disease. It's very hard to just go through the day. She was released from that. She was herself. She was pure in her feelings. She could enjoy the time. And she got up and she was dancing. And she was crying because, as she said, I said, are these tears of joy? She said, yes.
Hmm. Mike, in addition to following Dan as he goes through his work with music and memory, setting up the nonprofit, getting people involved, bringing music, you also talk to various other people. Bobby McFerrin is mm-hmm. in the film. Mm-hmm. The artist known as Samite of Uganda, who has recorded a number of albums under that name, also turns up in your film. He, right. too, has done kind of music therapy, right?
Yeah. And Samite is a very, he's African. He mm-hmm. just, he actually.
He's from Uganda, yes.
He's from Uganda. He was a refugee himself, mm-hmm. you know, and he goes back all the time and he deals with people that have dealt with phenomenally traumatic events in life. You know, in the film, he's basically bringing music to this village of women that had been raped and, mm-hmm. you know, tremendously abused. And so, he was natural because he understands that what we all really know is that music is, it has the capacity to be transformative and to heal. And his voice, if you listen to his voice, there's such wisdom in it. And that's why he's in this film, to remind us of the wisdom that can be transmitted through music.
In this part of the film, Alive Inside, Samite is talking about that trip to the Congo.
Mm. I was actually overwhelmed. I was in the Congo. These people were told that this guy is coming to bring music, the healing power of music. which was a little overwhelming because these were about 150 women who had just gone through rape, who had just gone through the worst abuses you could ever imagine. I think I was inspired, actually, because I picked up the flute and I played a really sad melody. And the melody came from the pain that I knew these women had been subjected to. And when I finished the flute, I could see tears running down on some of the women's faces. And the next place that I knew that I had to take them was to sing a happy song. So I kicked into Semsa Jagenda, Kaleva, Davida Valiekeyo, Kaleva, Kinyonyi Chirikuluzi, Kaleva, Jamba Densimbi. And soon they started moving a little bit, and soon they were clapping. Kaleva, Davida Valiekeyo. And I'm telling you, 3 hours later, we're still singing.
That is the artist Samite of Uganda, real name Samite Malando, who is a music therapist these days as well. In the film Alive Inside, a documentary about the impact that music can have on people with dementia, but much further than that, the film is screening at the Sunshine Theater here in New York starting on Friday, followed by a wider release across the country later this summer. The director, Michael Rosato Bennett, is here, and so is Dan Cohen, the founder of the nonprofit Music and Memory, whose work inspired the movie and makes up a good portion of it. Now, let me ask you guys, because what Samite is doing there is very different from, Dan, what you are doing, from what Dr. Connie Tomeno and Dr. Oliver Sacks have talked about, where music therapy is targeted. You need to know what music, you know, the person enjoyed when they were younger in order to unlock the memories, etc. Samite is presenting music that maybe these women didn't know, and they're just reacting to it as music. That seems like a subtle difference, but perhaps, Mike, an important one.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple things in this magic bag called music. You know, one of the things Dan is working on is specific music and how it affects and can awaken the brain. And but music itself, you know, has been used in every shamanic discipline mm-hmm. to awaken and transform people. It's used in every religion. It's, you know, we each individually, we use it ourselves. Like when we're sad and we've broken up with somebody and we go and we listen to our songs and we sit in our room and we cry. And it you know, music has that capacity to help us shake from one consciousness to another, to leave behind the past and to enter a new consciousness. And that's why I think this is absolutely pivotal.
Now, that's interesting. So Samite is helping these women get away from, it's not that they're going to forget the past and the horrors that have happened to them, but for a moment, they're outside of it.
People freeze. People, when they're living in a traumatic situation, like a nursing home or like war, they freeze. Mm-hmm. And for safety, they shut down. You know, well, how do you unshut down somebody? How do you get somebody's heart moving? How do you get their being moving? Like, you know, we've been using music for 500,000 years maybe to do that very thing.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening here. There's a, you know.
And Dan, you were actually, in the case of some of the Alzheimer's patients, giving them their past back, giving them access to memories that are still there in the brain, but maybe because of the progress of the disease, they're not able to readily access.
Yes, well, this is, you know, music is deeply embedded in our neural networks. As per Dan Levitin, who wrote This Is Your Brain on Music.
Right.
And not so affected by Alzheimer's. So it's there.
Now, again, it's not just Alzheimer's, though.
Right,
For
right.
me, one of the most touching case scenarios in the film is Steve, who has MS, was diagnosed in his 30s, a guy who grew up loving music, and has spent 10 years confined to a single bed, 8 of them without music, which to me just sounds like a living hell. And then finally, you bring him an iPod.
When I ended up here, I lost all of my music.
Steve was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in his late 30s. He's been in this bed for the last 10 years.
My world became this facility. after almost 8 years of being here without any music, I finally had the opportunity to get an iPod. And all of a sudden, vistas which I thought were closed to me opened up.
That is Steve's story, Steve with MS, and music and memory, not just for older patients with dementia, but anyone, Dan, I guess, who's...
People who are depressed. I mean, you know, half the people in nursing homes have Alzheimer's, so we tend to talk about them a lot.
Right.
But everybody. I mean, it's a pretty depressing kind of existence sometimes.
Well, so the film has a false ending, Mike, where, you know, you basically say, this is where I was going to leave it, with Dan attempting to get facilities to kind of buy into the idea of bringing music to their clients, their patients. And then there's, like, in the best musical tradition, a little coda at the end. Is this a result of Henry? Is this a result of that clip going viral?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not really a false ending. It is the way it ended for me, you know. And it was my son came into my bedroom and said, "Dad, I'm on the internet right now, and I think they're talking about your clip." And I was like, "What?" And I went into his room, and we watched it go from 302 to 800 views. And I was like, "Oh my God, we've doubled the views." Well, you know, we went to bed and we woke up the next morning, and it was 170,000. And by the end of that day, it was over a million views. And it was like the world literally opened its heart. It was a 6 minute clip of an old man in a nursing home. I mean, 6 minutes on the you know, that's an eternity.
Absolutely.
On the internet, you know.
Absolutely.
But that
changed for you. But Dan, what did it change for you and the project?
Well, it really, I instantly got, sort of within a week, 800 people writing me, you know, where can I get this done? How do I do this? And it certainly just exploded the awareness. And so that's what we're looking for, is awareness.
And Music and Memory is now in
640 nursing homes and assisted living facilities and hospices and hospitals and home care in 45 states and 8 countries.
So still more work to be done.
It's only 1% in the U.S. There are 60,000 care facilities. And so we're just really have, we have 99% to go.
All right. The story of Dan Cohen's Music and Memory project is told in Michael Rosato Bennett's film Alive Inside. It is screening at the Sunshine Theater here in New York starting on Friday, followed by wider release across the country later this summer. Mike and Dan, a real pleasure having you guys with us today. Good luck.
Thank you.
By the way, if you want more information about Dan Cohen's work and his organization, you can go to musicandmemory.org. Here's another example of the power of music to trigger strong memories. Our month-long listener question is, what were you doing in the summer of 94, and what were you listening to? Here's Paul from Harrington Park, New Jersey.
I graduated high school in 1994, and I always think that I was real into actual alternative music. I was a big follower of the Horde tour with bands like Big Head Todd and the Monsters, The Samples, Widespread Panic, obviously Blues Traveler. Turned into a real love and passion for the band Phish that extended to just the other night when I saw them in Randall's Island, New York.
Fluffhead was a with a horrible disease. Could not find no cure. Won't you help him if you please?
Thanks, Paul. Now here's a message from our listener Emily, who's originally from Berkeley, California. In 1994, Emily's babysitter, a friend of the family, took her on what I guess you might call field trips to Berkeley's now legendary DIY punk venue, 924 Gilman.
That was where Green Day was performing still, as well as Rancid. I don't remember if they were up Ivy or Rancid. And I used to have to make up the names of all the different places we'd been. And, oh, we went to the park, we went here, we went there. But really, we would be watching these rock bands at the Gilman in the afternoon and early evening. It's pretty awesome. All right, thanks.
Welcome to paradise.
Green Day and Welcome to Paradise from their album Kerplunk. If you haven't fessed up to your parents about what you were doing in 94 and what you were listening to, well, you can tell your uncle Soundcheck. Just call us at 866-939-1612. That's 866-939-1612. Coming up, the Scottish indie band Camera Obscura joins us to play live and mostly unplugged in the studio. And later, love, intrigue, and the creepy-sounding instrument known as the theremin. It's all in a new novel called Us Conductors. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. There were some big life changes in store for the members of the band Camera Obscura after they released their last record, 2009's My Maudlin Career. Since then, the Scottish band has dealt with illness, relocation, and parenthood. But they still managed to put out a new album. It's called Desire Lines, and it came out last year. Today, the band is here in the Soundcheck studio to play some of it for us. This is the band Camera Obscura with a song called Do It Again, live on Soundcheck.
Come on, number 26 and 3/4. Turn on the lights now. Do it again. You were insatiable. I was more than capable. When you fall in my corner, just do it again. You're walking around. Can you see tears on this ground? Turn on the lights now, let's do it again. You were insatiable, I was more than capable. And you fall in my corner, would you do it again? You're walking around. Can you see? I said one more time. do it again and again. Let's do it again. Let's do it again and again. Let's do it again.
From Scotland, the band Camera Obscura, live on Soundcheck with an unplugged version of their song Do It Again, which comes from the band's latest record called Desire Lines. You heard Tracy Ann Campbell singing and playing the acoustic guitar. Tracy Ann, welcome.
Hello.
Carrie Lander was at our piano, not playing it just yet. Some of the softest backing vocals, Carrie, I think I've ever heard. the electric guitarist Kenny McKeeve, content to do some hand claps there, and drummer Lee Thompson with more hand claps. So that's a really stripped-down version of what is one of the kind of bigger-sounding songs on the record called Desire Lines. Now, Tracy Ann, I didn't know that term, Desire Lines.
Ooh, okay.
Well, but, you know, so it's apparently a path that's created by foot traffic.
Yeah, right? So if people in parks, they don't stick to the roads that they're meant to stick on, and they somehow take another path, and then just by loads of people walking it, the becomes a new path.
Right. So
I think I made up my own sort of version of what it means.
Well, I think
you're going to ask me what that is now, and I'm going to.
You go to any park or college campus, anywhere where there's like an open green, and you will find, you know, somehow people just tend to find their way.
Yeah, there's desire lines all over the place, I think.
Yeah. It's a really kind of neat term.
It's nice.
Did that come like early in the process? Did that sort of trigger something?
It was just an idea for a song. Somebody told me what a desire line was, and I thought it was a nice sort of idea for my song.
Yeah. So Desire Lines is the name of the record. Camera Obscura, band from Scotland. Now, how much, you guys are on the road an awful lot. How much have you been home lately?
We've been home quite a long time lately, for about 10 months, actually.
Okay.
We've been touring less over the past few years for various reasons.
Well, now you had a baby recently,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I did.
And the bass player, Gavin, who's not with us today, also became a dad recently.
He became a dad, and Kenny became a dad almost 2 years ago, so.
Okay, so there is that, but there's also big goings-on in Scotland these days. I mean, you've got that referendum coming in September.
We do.
Which, you know, the question is a single basic question. Should Scotland be an independent country? What do you guys think?
I think we're probably quite split. Actually.
Really?
I think we've got a couple of yes people here, maybe. I don't know.
I would go towards yes.
You would? Yes. Yeah. I'm kind of on the fence towards no, but I'm not sure yet.
Yeah. What about you, Carrie?
All the people I know that are really vocal about it are all passionately yes, which makes you want to join in. But I'm a bit scared because I'm a bit pessimistic.
But the guys seem to be into the idea, and, you know, so what happens if Scotland's an independent country? Do you lose, like, arts funding, BBC, all that kind of
stuff? Well, this is the thing. Who knows what we lose? Who knows what we gain? I personally find it quite hard to understand what we'll keep and what we won't keep. I'd like to be really optimistic about it, and, you know, but I don't know. Sometimes I think there's maybe a wee bit too much sort of separation in the world. And I like being Scottish. I like living in Scotland, but I also like living in the UK.
So will you guys be back in Scotland by September 18th?
Yes. Okay. Well, Lee doesn't get to vote because he lives in London now. So.
Oh, right.
So that's unfortunate.
That's one of the, Lee, that's one of the things that they had to decide was whether Scottish people living outside of Scotland could take part, right?
Yeah. I mean, I just moved recently, so it's sort of annoying because I've sort of spent all my life in Scotland apart from the last 2 years, and I'm not allowed to vote. So, yeah.
All right, so no absentee ballots, so you got to be there.
But, I mean, it's kind of fair enough. We don't want, Sean Connery deciding, you know, what we do with our future,
right?
Frankly.
But
no offence, Sean Connery, but
instead, you've got a bunch of 16 and 17-year-olds helping to decide because they've lowered the voting age for this thing.
Well, is that gone through? I don't know if that's gone through.
16, I think.
Right. 16. You have to be 16 to vote. All right. So anyway, that's off in September. Right now, Camera Obscura is here in New York. They're in our Soundcheck studio playing for us here on the show today. Their latest album is called Desire Lines. It is out now, band's first record in a while. And the last record, My Maudlin Career, had a kind of a hit tune on it with French Navy. You guys want to do that for us?
Yep.
All right. Once again, Camera Obscura, live on Soundcheck. Band Camera Obscura with a live performance of the fan favorite called French Navy. That comes from their 2009 album My Maudlin Career, but that's a live unplugged performance here in the studio. Once again, Tracy Ann Campbell singing, Kenny McKeeve playing guitar, Carrie Lander at our piano, Lee Thompson on percussion. Bass player Gavin Dunbar not with us today, but the band is here playing for us on Soundcheck today. And I mentioned that, you know, the new album, the newest record, Desire Lines, kind of a big gap between the two. We mentioned that three of you have become parents. Lee moved to London. Carrie, you were being treated for cancer in that kind of hiatus there. How are you doing now?
Okay. It's never quite straightforward.
All right. But good enough that you're out on the road again.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So at what point did you realize, okay, I think we can do a new record?
I don't know. I think it was quite clear from the start that you know, we should try to write for a new record anyway. Katie was, you know, keen for that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So we did. We just tried to get on with it.
Yeah. We had to have a discussion whether or not to fire Katie for having cancer. But.
It was close.
As soon as treatment was finished and Kenny had his baby around that time, then we booked the studio and
we got it done.
And you booked the studio in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like, let's go down the block and, you know.
No, we were quite brave about it, I think. You know, we were sort of determined to do it and do it the way that we desired to do it. We wanted to do it here. We wanted to do it with Tucker in Portland. And
that's Tucker Martin, yep. Who's produced The Decemberists and My Morning Jacket, yeah. And Nico Case and Nico and Jim James, My Morning Jacket, are on the latest album, Desire Lines. So, do you guys like? Did you like Portland? Do you get the show Portlandia in Scotland?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, did you go expecting something like that?
Yeah, I mean, we've been there before on tour, so we knew it's all true before we went. But yeah, we had a great time spending like six weeks there or whatever it was.
It's a great city.
Well, the results are on the latest record from Camera Obscura called Desire Lines. Hearing them in an unplugged setting, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us. It was great.
When I found you good from crying, I could have slapped you in the face. One lesson I should learn is, with you acting this way, you are a good boy. Oh, she's a good at tea.
Up next, you've probably heard the theremin on B-movie soundtracks, but you might not know the story behind the instrument. It's the subject of a new novel called Us Conductors. We'll talk with the author, Shawn Michaels, next on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The theremin is an instrument that seems to be from the future. It's played by waving your hands between two antennas. You don't actually touch it at all. But in fact, the theremin was invented almost a century ago. Its popularity peaked in the 1950s when its eerie sound appeared in film scores like The Thing and The Day the Earth Stood Still. And in 1966, the Beach Boys used an instrument called the electrotheremin, also known as the tannerin, on their classic hit, Good Vibrations.
I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations.
Now, the theremin and its creator, Leon Theremin, are the subject of a new book called Us Conductors. It's a fictionalized take on the life of the instrument's inventor. And joining me from Montreal, Canada today is the book's author, Shawn Michaels. Shawn, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here.
So first, let me ask, when did you discover the theremin, the instrument?
I feel like I've always known the theremin in some context. I must have learned about it as a kid or something like that. I'd seen it around a few places live as kind of a gizmo on stage to wow the crowd. But it was about 5 or 10 years ago that I had a really different experience of the theremin when I was out on a long nighttime drive in a car, and I turned on the radio and I was listening to a beautiful opera aria that sort of seemed to just come out of the night and was really, really moving for me. And then at the end of the segment, the radio host explained that I had been listening to someone playing the theremin and that it hadn't been a singer at all, but just a real virtuoso of the instrument who had made it sound like a human voice.
Well, and that probably would have been Clara Rockmore's recording, right?
Yeah, I think it was either Clara or a Canadian thereminist called Peter Pringle.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of people who really have become real virtuosos. And Clara Rockmore, a fictionalized version of her, is the sort of the main object of the attention of your Lev Theremin or Leon Theremin character in this book, Us Conductors. Now, he was known as Leon Theremin here in the States, but he was from Russia, where he was Lev Theremin.
Yeah.
How much fictionalizing did you have to do? Because this guy had an extraordinary life, didn't he?
Yeah, he had an incredible life. It was a roller coaster that brought him from sort of the highest society of America and Europe to the Siberian Gulag. He was a spy. He was a scientist. He danced and invented all sorts of crazy things. He really had a crazy life. And so there was definitely no need to add embellishments to make the story interesting.
And yet you did. In the book, Leon Theremin, in addition to all the inventing and all the spying, which was all true, learns Kung Fu and kills a man.
That's right. He does, yeah.
Here is a clip of the Russian inventor playing the instrument that he invented. You can also watch a video of this on our website at soundcheck.org. That is Lev Theremin, or Leon Theremin, as he was known when he came to the States in the 1920s, playing the instrument that bears his name, the eerie sound of the theremin. You can watch that video at soundcheck.org, and Theremin's life, a fictionalized version of his life, is the subject of Shawn Michaels' new novel called Us Conductors. Now, in the book, we're getting Leon's life story, but we're getting it in a kind of epistolary form, the form of a letter being written to the love of his life, I guess I'll say the obsession of his life, which is this character, Clara Risenberg, who is the real-life Clara Rockmore. She was a great player of the theremin and a classically trained musician. How did you choose this part of the story to focus on?
Well, the book is in fact two different letters written about a decade apart. And both of these letters are written from Lev to Clara. When he's writing the first letter, he's on a ship returning to Russia after having spent about a decade in New York, kind of this exciting, riotous decade. It's the jazz age. He's a celebrity. He meets this beautiful young violinist. He falls in love with her. There are marriages. There's adventure. There's spying.
But there are marriages, but it's important to say not to Clara.
exactly. That's true.
We do know from the facts of Theremin's life that he did propose to the real-life Clara Rockmore and was turned down. Mm-hmm. But she remained the main proponent throughout her career of Theremin's instrument and did a number of really striking recordings. Listen to this. This is Camille Saint-Saëns' familiar piece for cello called The Swan, but it's not played on cello here. This is Clara Rockmore, the late Clara Rockmore, playing the instrument known as the theremin.
Thank you.
a version of The Swan by the French composer Camille Saint-Saëns, a famous piece for cello, but played here on the theremin, the early electronic instrument invented by Leon Theremin and played by the virtuoso performer Clara Rockmore. The tale of unrequited love, Leon loves Clara, she doesn't love him back, that is a true tale, but everything else around it in Shawn Michaels' book called Us Conductors has been expanded and fictionalized. And it seems to me, Shawn, from reading through this, that you really had an inner 1920s in your head when you were writing this. Leon Theremin meets George Gershwin, he meets Schillinger, well-known music theorist. He meets all these amazing people. But then as I look at the titles of the chapter, I mean, chapter two is called Pink, Orange, Red, and I'm thinking, oh, that's interesting. There's a Cocteau Twins song with that title. And then a little later, there's a chapter called Age of Consent, which is the name of a New Order song. And once I sort of cottoned on to that, you look at the rest of the chapter titles. There's a song by Talk Talk. There's a song by Susie and the Banshees. So what, in fact, were you listening to while you were writing this?
I was listening to all sorts of things, but it's really great that you caught my little chapter title winks. As much as this is a story of New York in the 20s and 30s and of Russia in the 30s and 40s with this certain kind of jazz music and this cold, chilly sounds of a winter in Moscow, it was also, I really wanted it to capture the energy of that new wave post-punk music of the 80s and even some of the ambient electronic music of today, not just like old film stock that's running through, but something a little bit more diaphanous and modern.
And that playlist is available on our website at soundcheck.org. We've been speaking with Shawn Michaels, writer and music critic. Shawn is founder of the blog Said the Gramophone, but he is now author of the new novel called Us Conductors, based on the remarkable life and inventions and spying career of Russia's Lev Theremin, or Leon Theremin. Thanks very much for being with us today.
It was my great pleasure. Thank you very much.
Earlier in the show, we talked with the Scottish band Camera Obscura. Here's a little more from that session. This is the band playing the title track of their latest album, Desire Lines, here in the Soundcheck studio.
Thank you.
That's the song Desire Lines, performed by the band Camera Obscura, live in the Soundcheck studio. You can listen to this session, and you can explore our huge archive of in-studio performances online at soundcheck.org, or get these sessions delivered to your mobile device by subscribing to our free podcast. It's all at soundcheck.org. As you may have heard, the jazz bassist Charlie Hayden died last week at age 76. Tomorrow on the show, an appreciation of this hugely influential musician and a list of his essential recordings. It's the Soundcheck Guide to Charlie Hayden. We'll be joined by music critic Nate Chenin of the New York Times. Soundcheck is a production of WNYC. Irene Trudell leads our engineering team with Paul Schneider, Bill O'Neill, and Jason Isaac. The show is produced by Katie Bishop, Dan O'Donnell, and Mike Katziff, with Amy Pearl and our interns, Haley Shaw and Micah Lowinger. Our executive producer is Joel Meyer. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.